The Holly and the Ivy. Go have a lie down, Lupin told Elizabeth sternly as he pointed his wand at an array of enchanted ornaments, positioning them in their proper spots around the tree. The living room had been enlarged 3 times, and a 15-foot spruce stood in the corner where the waterfall usually trickled, and the scent of pine and cider filled the air. Although it was nearly twilight, the enormous roaring fireplace and floating red-ribboned lanterns provided the only light necessary on the cozy scene. "No, I'm helping you," Elizabeth replied stubbornly, although she wasn't really sure what she was doing to help.
"I do this by myself every year," he replied calmly. "Luces!" he shouted, and 1,000 sparkling silver lights appeared within the tree.
"Do the candles, Dad!"
Teddy enthused, his bright eyes dancing with reflected tree light. Lupin obediently waved his wand at a box of candles, which scattered themselves within the tree, each bursting forth with a small gold flame.
"They're going to burn down the tree!" Elizabeth yelled.
"They certainly aren't. It's non-flammable flame. Now go lie down," he retorted, and she promptly burst into tears.
"You don't even want me around," she bawled as she stomped up the stairs, "because I'm just a big, fat, useless muggle!"
Lupin and Teddy exchanged horrified glances.
"Dad, what's wrong with our Elizabeth?"
Teddy wailed.
"It's this muggle pregnancy bit," Lupin whispered conspiratorially. "It's hormones. They get awfully moody."
"What's a hormone?"
"Shh," Lupin hissed furiously and went off up the stairs. Elizabeth, as he'd expected, was sitting on the settee crying, and when he walked in, she made a dreadful face.
"What's that about?"
he said and tried to give her a kiss, but she turned her face away.
"There's no reason to be upset."
"Oh, what do you know?" she shrieked. "Go on downstairs. You told me to come up here, and I did."
"I just wanted you to rest," he replied and sat warily beside her. "I feel rather badly that you've got to deal with a party. I don't want you to get worn out."
"I'm not worn out," she sniffed and put her head on his shoulder. "I'm not some helpless old lady or some desperately ill invalid. I'm just pregnant."
"Well, I know that," he said patiently. "But do you honestly feel the same as you did a few months ago?"
"No," Elizabeth wailed. "I don't, because now I'm a big, giant cow."
"You aren't," he said sternly. "I think you look gorgeous. Shall I prove it?"
"No,"
she replied, but gave him a smile.
"That's your no that really means yes,"
he told her cheerfully and started kissing the nape of her neck.
"Dad!"
Teddy yelled from downstairs.
"Neville's here! With his toad!"
Lupin stomped over to the door and shouted down the stairs.
"Do that greenery, will you, Neville? I'm gonna lie down with Elizabeth for a bit."
He went back in the bedroom without waiting for a reply.
"Cool!"
Teddy shrieked as Neville expertly flung his wand around the room, looking rather like the tall conductor of an orchestra in his long gold cloak. Branches of holly and ivy in wreath-shaped clusters appeared below the mantelpiece and around the edges of the ceiling, adorned with fairies singing Christmas carols, and 12 poinsettias in full bloom burst out around the hearth, joining in the caroling. Thick white enchanted snowflakes, which disappeared as soon as they hit the ground, began falling, and a twittering mistletoe appeared in the corner opposite the tree. It squealed happily.
"No,"
Teddy replied with a horrified face.
"I'm not kissing anybody. Yuck!"
"Has he done the carpet yet?" Neville asked as he brushed some snow off his long brown curls. Teddy shook his head and they walked out into the snow-covered porch, where Neville shouted, "Aloha Bara Morada!" And Teddy clapped his hands. A long purple velvet carpet began unfurling itself from the porch steps to the gate, twinkling lights illuminating the path on either side.
"The Christmas elves! Do the hats!"
Teddy yelled delightedly. And Neville waved up red and gold hats onto the stone Christmas elves that lined the walkway, and then conjured up the most realistic creche Teddy had ever seen.
"Wow! Are they real?"
he shouted.
"Oh, Negoshi baby Jesus! Aunt Elizabeth's going to have a baby!"
he added excitedly, as if Neville couldn't possibly have known this, and Neville gave him an affectionate look.
"They aren't real. They're just enchanted toads," he replied with a grin. "Trevor lets me practice on him. That's how I got really good at it."
"Did you know Aunt Elizabeth thinks it's really funny that we got purple carpets outside our houses at Christmas?"
Snow started falling in thick and furious flakes from the sky, and Neville brushed off his dark gold cloak and smiled.
"No. What color carpet do the muggles put out?"
"They don't even have one!"
Teddy shook his head sadly.
"No carpet at all."
"Weird,"
Neville agreed, and there was a moment of silence, apparently out of pity for the muggles.
"Let's go back inside. You haven't your cloak."
After the greenery was done, he went in the kitchen and put out the cheery red tablecloth that was folded on the counter, waving the serving bowls, plates, and utensils into place, while filling goblets with mead, claret, butter beer, fire whiskey, and Christmas punch that was stacked in crates against the wall. "It's funny," he thought cheerfully as he poured himself a goblet of fire whiskey. "I used to be nervous coming over here. Now it seems like home or something." He had started helping Lupin during full moon when William was under the anger curse, and they just continued it afterwards. It made Neville feel rather good about himself, and was certainly more practical, since Neville could knock Lupin down if necessary, and William couldn't. Neville generally showed up at least twice a week anyway, often spending the night when Lupin was gone and worried about Elizabeth and Teddy being alone. Having grown up in what he was quite sure was England's gloomiest and most foreboding manner, he found Lupin's cheerful cottage a welcome respite. Teddy was funny and sweet, Elizabeth always lent him a sympathetic ear, and he was actually starting to feel like Lupin's friend rather than some overgrown kid tagging after a much-admired older brother. The doorbells, which had been transfigured to giant sleigh bells for the holiday season, pealed merrily, and Neville trotted happily off to the entranceway with goblet in hand. He peered through the curtains of the round window on the door and reeled backwards in terror. "Oh no," he thought desperately. "It's Shacklebolt! Where the hell is Lupin?" He looked frantically at the staircase, as if this might cause Lupin to descend from it, and then decided he would go out onto the back porch and pretend he hadn't heard the bell. After a few taps, Kingsley, in a large, sullen, stupid-looking fellow in a blue cloak, strolled in through the door. "Since you didn't appear to be planning on opening the door," Kingsley barked out, "I opened it myself. I know his codes." Neville was frozen with fear.
Sorry, he babbled quickly. "I was going to open the door, but
further words would not come out of his mouth. "Fine," Kingsley replied in his sonorous voice, and gave Neville a stern but somewhat amused look.
"Perhaps you ought to drink more of that fire whiskey."
Neville stared down at the goblet in his hand. He'd quite forgotten it was there, and began gulping it down at a rapid rate, while Kingsley strode off into the den with his attaché lurking behind him. After another desperate look at the staircase, Neville followed behind.
"Kingsley!"
Teddy shrieked from the den and flung himself into his arms, and Neville thought he'd never been so glad to see another person in his entire life.
"Hello, Teddy," Kingsley said affectionately and ruffled his hair. "What are you about? Where's your father?"
"He's upstairs with Aunt Elizabeth," Teddy said importantly. "She is having hormones. He has to cheer her up."
Neville thought it was in Kingsley's favor that he did not laugh at this, although his mouth twitched slightly.
"Excellent. Here, I've brought you a present."
He turned and scowled at the fellow behind him, who looked quite confused.
"Barkley," he bellowed, "get the packages out."
The man sullenly pulled two packages wrapped in shiny gold paper from his cloak pocket and thrust them at Kingsley. And when Kingsley sat himself on a sofa, Teddy began whooping with joy and clamoring on him as if he were a great black bear.
"Teddy!" Neville was so shocked he had finally found his voice. "Quit climbing on him! He's the Minister of Magic!"
Both of them ignored him, and Kingsley handed Teddy one of the packages. "Open it up," he said sternly, and Teddy let out a great shriek of delight.
"I like children," Kingsley said thoughtfully and glanced up at Neville. "I suppose they know. They always seem to want to climb on me. Remus used to do it when he was a first year."
Neville spluttered and choked on his fire whiskey.
"You can strangle yourself," Kingsley told him with another half-amused expression. "I was a seventh year, and just the size I am now. Remus and his friends were about so high," he indicated a height somewhere between his waist and his elbow. "And Remus liked me because I would help him with his potions essays," he said with a smile. "Anyway, you know how little boys like to wrestle. He and Sirius and James decided if the three of them took me on, they could get me down."
He chuckled to himself.
"Thanks!"
Teddy shrieked and held up a 6-inch miniature dragon that appeared quite lifelike. It stomped about on his palm and breathed out little puffs of flame.
"Is it real?"
"It is," Kingsley replied solemnly. "Shrunk it down myself. Always been good at shrinking spells," he told Neville, and Neville winced.
"He's going to get pissed off at me and make me smaller than that dragon," he thought as he finished off his goblet and hurried back into the kitchen for more.
"Neville!" Teddy shouted. "Aren't you going to offer him something to drink? That's what you do when you have guests,"
he told himself righteously.
"It's polite. Mrs. Fig brought pastries and pies,"
Teddy informed Kingsley delightedly and started dancing around in front of him.
"I hope Hermione doesn't bring that awful muggle cake she did last year,"
he added darkly.
"My dad used it as a doorstop for the barn."
Sorry, Neville stammered out frantically and wondered if he could disapparate without looking suspicious. "Did you want... I mean..."
He had absolutely no idea how to finish the sentence. Kingsley just sighed, strolled into the kitchen, and poured himself a glass of mead, and Neville almost fainted with relief when Lupin apparated right beside him.
Thought I heard your dulcet tones, he grinned at Kingsley, who shook his hand and then clapped him on the back. For God's sake, don't knock me over. Want some apple pie? It's Arabella's.
Neville took Lupin's appearance as his excuse to rush out of the room, but the guard fellow blocked his path.
Where are you going? He intoned harshly. Seem rather nervous, I say. Suspicious.
Oh, shut up, Neville thought furiously, and went back in the kitchen and sat down at the table with a great sigh.
Mr. Longbottom is in the order, Lupin said politely to the guard without looking at him, and he has top-level security clearance. You needn't concern yourself with harassing him.
Well, that's for me to decide, the fellow declaimed ferociously and gave Lupin what Neville imagined was meant to be an intimidating stare. I'm here to guard the minister.
You don't need to be here. The minister can take care of himself rather well. And if he's in want of assistance, Mr. Longbottom and I will provide it,
Lupin replied politely.
Huh, the man said superciliously, and cast an unimpressed glance at both Neville and Lupin. I am trained to provide protection!
Neville felt his ears starting to get warm.
Good God, you're an idiot! Kingsley bellowed, and the whole kitchen shook. He's an Auror and the captain of the Bloody Order, and I've seen him kill 20 Death Eaters at once. And Longbottom may act like a frightened schoolboy, but he'd take you out in 10 seconds.
Neville wasn't sure if this was a compliment or not, but the fellow looked quite aggrieved, so he gave him a triumphant look.
I'm sure you're very good at your job, Lupin told the man politely. I just thought you'd rather spend time with your family than guarding the minister when it isn't necessary. The whole order will be here, you know.
It's in the bylaws, Kingsley sighed and shrugged at Lupin. I'm going to bring this fool with me. He's one of the governor's sons, and those bastards appointed him. Sit down, Barkley!
Barkley sat with a great deal of glowering at Neville and Lupin, and Lupin turned away to examine the second gold-wrapped package, which was apparently for him.
Well, doesn't seem to be flammable, he said and shook it. I don't suppose it's going to blow up. Just a letter of dismissal, is it?
No,
Kingsley replied threateningly, and Neville shuddered.
Damn,
Lupin said cheerfully and started unwrapping the package, which seemed to be some sort of snow globe. Lupin looked at it intently and handed it to Neville to inspect. Three small figures were gallivanting about in the snow, hurling snowballs and shouting gleefully at one another. On closer inspection, he realized the boys were Lupin, Sirius, and James, apparently during their first winter at Hogwarts.
Thanks, Lupin said to Kingsley rather gruffly. That's great. That's a real memory, he added it to Neville. See where James and I are trying to bury Sirius in the snow? I remember this.
Only the best for the Ministry's whole,
Kingsley replied dryly, and Lupin burst out laughing. Neville gave him an appalled look.
Kingsley's appointed me to a new position, Lupin told him with a smile. I'm awfully flattered.
The doorbells pealed again. Thank God, Neville thought frantically, and hurried off towards the front hall, with Teddy bounding behind him.
It's Arthur and Molly and George and Charlie and some girl and Ginny and Bill, Fleur and Ron and Hermione,
he shouted loudly to Neville.
We better quit talking about that cake she brings.
What, the fruitcake?
Grinned George as he stomped the snow off his boots on the red and gold happy Christmas rug, tossing his traveling cloak to a very sullen-looking Weezer, who purposefully dragged it on the ground to the entranceway wardrobe.
I heard you, Teddy,
Hermione announced cheerfully. Her arms were full of packages, and she looked quite pretty in a red velvet frock.
I told you nobody likes my fruitcake,
she called over her shoulder to Molly, who was decked out in green robes dotted with gaudily oversized snowflakes, and a tall pointed red hat that clashed horribly with her hair.
That's because you don't make it properly, dear,
Molly replied condescendingly, and Hermione stuck out her tongue at her behind her back. Ron started laughing as he carried in some bottles of Ogden's finest fire whiskey and Dillweed's dragon blood. Apparently he had been dressed by Hermione, as he looked rather handsome in a long navy blue cloak, cream-colored broadcloth shirt, and blue velvet breeches with black boots.
Want a nap? I've just got in from Romania,
Charlie yawned and stretched himself out on one of the sofas with his head on the lap of his pretty and giggly blonde date, who wore a short-skirted Santa Claus costume that was earning her many reproving glances from his mother.
Wake me up when the fun starts, will you, George?
Sure, George replied amiably and began tossing some silver sparklers around the room, where they emitted loud bangs and then hung frozen in midair. Kingsley came out and began greeting the newcomers, which caused Charlie and his date to jump up from the couch and Molly to begin smiling in a rather fawning sort of way. Neville was pleased that Ron looked a bit askance at Kingsley himself, although George just strolled up and started chatting with him. Neville broke for the kitchen, where Lupin was pouring a tray full of drinks.
What happened with the date?
He looked up and asked him cheerfully.
She cancelled on me, Neville replied happily. She just called up and said she suddenly felt sick and...
He stopped and gave Lupin a suspicious look.
Did you have anything to do with this?
Do you want her here?
No, but you needn't make her sick. She isn't sick at all, Lupin replied pleasantly. She's just suddenly developed a great dislike of you.
Neville tried to frown at this, but found he couldn't quite manage it. He'd been trying to find a way to get rid of Esmeralda for weeks. He sat down at the table and turned up the second bottle of fire whiskey, feeling much more cheerful indeed. There were now enough people present that he didn't need to speak to Shacklebolt at all. The fire whiskey was giving him a very pleasant sensation indeed, and Rosie was sure to arrive within the hour. And no Grand to smell my breath when I get home, he thought happily. I can drink as much as I want. Lupin looked at the two empty bottles of fire whiskey in front of Neville with a rather alarmed expression.
Better be careful with that stuff, he said casually. You've never been much of a drinker. It'll catch up to you.
What do you know? I'm drinking all I want, Neville replied defiantly, and Lupin just shook his head. See? I'm having more, he announced stubbornly and tried to pour another round into his goblet, but gave up when it kept slopping onto the red tablecloth and just started drinking it straight from the bottle.
Well, save some for somebody else, will you?
Lupin asked him amiably, and Neville responded with a dreadful scowl. Elizabeth wandered in and stopped next to Neville.
Thanks for doing the greenery, Neville. It's great, she told him warmly. And thanks for... Will you quit staring at my boobs?
But they're right there, Neville announced. In his seated position, he was indeed at eye level with Elizabeth's chest. They've gotten even bigger. I mean, there they are. I'm a guy. Oh, I can't help it if...
Stop talking,
Lupin snapped at him from across the kitchen, and Elizabeth started giggling and went hastily over to the other side of the room.
Well, don't get all pussy on me, Neville told him rudely. Don't think of her like that. You know I like Rosie. I'm just looking at her boobs because they're...
Silencio!
Lupin shouted, and the infuriated and speechless Neville started pounding on the table with his fist. George trotted into the kitchen, looking quite impressed.
What have you done to him? He grinned at Lupin, and then turned towards Neville.
Venite, what did you say, Neville?
Nothing! Neville yelled hotly and stood up swaying. Do you dare do a spell on me? I'll take you on, he told Lupin threateningly, and George burst out laughing.
Neville's drunk, he called back to the rest of the crowd. It's great! Got to check this out.
Well, go ahead then,
Lupin told Neville as he started helping Elizabeth arrange platters of food.
Get out of your wand, Neville hissed and started pawing around in his left pocket. We're gonna have a duel.
I think I'll wait till you've actually got yours in your hand, Lupin replied cheerfully. And you're looking in the wrong pocket.
This irritated Neville so much he just stomped out into the den and started looking around for Rosie. A few hours later, the room was crowded with happy guests full of Christmas cheer, most of them stretched out on two long sofas or the multiple overstuffed armchairs, except for Neville, who was sprawled out on the floor. Elizabeth looked quite glamorous in an A-line gown of gold crushed velvet and creamy pearls, her hair swept up in a chignon with curls trailing down the sides of her pink cheeks, and after a bit of badgering, began playing Christmas carols on the piano while George turned the pages with his wand. Hagrid appeared in a dreadful red and green patchwork hairy cloak with matching earmuffs, laden down with stoat sandwiches and dragon's blood. Luna and the creepy boyfriend, whose name Neville never could remember, arrived and proudly presented Lupin with something in a box he seemed frightened of. Kingsley sat by the fireplace sipping mead, while Teddy sat on his lap and played with the dragon. And finally, the person Neville had been looking for all evening, Rosie, appeared out of the fireplace with Arthur, who had apparently been sent to fetch her.
"Sorry I'm late," she announced to everyone, while giving Lupin a look that said this was all his fault. "I had to owl Ginny because Tim wasn't home yet to bring me, and nobody else thought to come get me."
"Sorry," Lupin replied unrepentantly and strolled over to sit on the piano bench by Elizabeth.
"Hello!" Neville beamed as he sprang up from the floor, only to promptly fall face first onto the coffee table.
"Have you been drinking?"
Rosie smiled as she sat down several large platters.
"Lucretia sent some food," she yelled over to Elizabeth.
"I've been drinking some," he hissed in a conspiratorial whisper and hiccuped. "Not that much,"
he gave her an angelic smile. Rosie grinned and glanced around the room to see if unwanted date was present, and was pleased to see the only girl she didn't know wrapped up in an embrace with Charlie.
"Everybody gets drunk at the order party," George told her amiably. He and Bill had helped haul Neville up off the floor. "It's a rule."
"Good."
Rosie smiled and looked up into Neville's eyes. "This might work out really well if he's drunk. He won't be scared of me then," she thought happily, and twirled around in her green sparkling off-the-shoulder dress, casting her eyes over at her aunt so that Neville wouldn't know she was actually posing for him.
"See my new dress, Elizabeth? Ginny picked it out.
I did, Ginny said proudly. And it was only 12 pounds. Can you believe it?
She and Rosie started giggling furiously. It was not, Elizabeth replied cheerfully. But you do look great, Rosie. Whatever did you do, Ginny? Change the price tags.
Ginevra Weasley!
Her mother began in a shrill voice, but Lupin cut her off.
No shrieking at the party,
he said mildly. But Molly sat back in a sulk as if she'd been thoroughly rebuked.
Elizabeth and your mom used to change price tags when they were teenagers, Lupin told Rosie. She wrote me an owl asking me if I thought she'd go to hell.
I wouldn't say anything about what anyone did in school if I were you, Harry said knowingly to Lupin. Sirius told me a lot of stories.
He sat down his empty bottle of fire whiskey and looked satisfied.
Did you go to school with Remus Kingsley?
Elizabeth asked politely, and Shacklebolt smiled.
Certainly, he replied. I met him the first week when he was in the common room crying over his potions essay.
Everyone found this quite funny indeed.
Ha! Neville said loudly. Guess I'm not the only one that was a loser in school.
Lupin looked amused at this, but Kingsley gave Neville a severe look that, despite his inebriated state, rather frightened him.
I wouldn't say that, he replied sternly. He was barely 11, and he did end up a prefect and one of the three most popular boys in school, he added, and Lupin gave Neville an evil smirk.
I hate you, Neville hissed at him. When Harry gets drunk, George announced to Rosie, who was trying not to giggle at Neville, he starts saying stuff he usually won't. It's great.
When George gets drunk, added Lupin, he takes off all his clothes and runs out in the snow and makes angels. And then we all argue for about an hour over who's going to drag him in. One year he's going to die of hypothermia.
You could just operate me in, George told him in an offended tone. Except by then you're too shit-faced to do it.
Neville was rather relieved when Ginny pulled Rosie off to the side and the two of them began whispering furiously. It gave him a moment to guzzle down more fire whiskey and try to think of something to say to her.
We've spiked the mead,
Ginny hissed dramatically.
Me and Hermione and Luna, so the guys will get drunker than us and we can make fun of them.
That is brilliant, Rosie whispered back and sat down on the carpet beside Neville, curling up her legs and smiling as she arranged her dress.
I'm only drinking mead, Arthur announced happily from his armchair, and Hermione and Ginny exchanged conspiratorial glances. Don't make a fool of myself like I did that one year,
everybody groaned.
Don't even bring it up,
Molly shrilled.
Well, Arthur replied thoughtfully, it's not as if anyone else hasn't done it. There was that year that Remus said he had an idea, and
I'll pay you 20 galleons not to finish that sentence,
Lupin replied immediately.
What did he do? Elizabeth asked interestedly. Tell me, Arthur.
Well, Arthur looked at her complacently, it's never a good thing when Remus says he has an idea.
Nor George, for that matter. 30 galleons. 50,
Lupin said desperately. Not a strap for cash like I used to be, Arthur replied proudly. Anyway, shouldn't have had the party 2 nights before full moon. You know how he is then, he gave Elizabeth an apologetic glance. Can't ever let him drink then.
He uses that full moon business to excuse everything,
Molly said reprovingly, and Elizabeth frowned at her.
He can't help it, she said stubbornly.
Remus has got a protectress, Mum, George offered up lazily. I bet she can take you on. Better leave it, then.
This, apparently, was quite the wrong thing to say.
I've known him since he was 19,
Molly informed Elizabeth in an icy tone.
I think I know him better than you do.
I've known him since he was 17,
Elizabeth replied sweetly, and I'm quite sure we're even more intimately acquainted.
Everyone fell over laughing at this, and Molly jumped up in a huff.
I'm going home, she snapped. Let's go, Arthur!
See you,
Lupin told her cheerfully, and Arthur, who was finishing his fourth mug of mead, just shrugged his shoulders and looked out the window.
Lovely, jubbly white snow,
he shouted happily, his face nearly as red as his thinning hair.
Lovely, jubbly.
Molly jumped into the fireplace with loud pop.
Excellent, George shouted.
Elizabeth looked a bit askance and started whispering some apology to Lupin, apparently feeling she'd caused trouble at his party.
Glad we got that over with, Charlie called out from the corner where he was now snogging the leggy blonde. Somebody leaves bad every year, Elizabeth. It's a tradition.
Last year it was Harry, Hermione announced brightly. He and Ron got in a fight because Ron didn't believe him at first when he said he didn't put his name in that goblet of fire. Didn't that happen, like, 10 years ago or something?
Rosie said in a puzzled voice.
11. Harry holds a grudge, Ron told her amiably. Don't let him fool you. The year before that, it was Ginny, George called out. And once it was Fleur because she got in a fight with Mum.
She's always shrieking, Fleur replied haughtily. It was giving me the headache.
Neville began humming to himself.
Did you ever leave Matt?
Rosie said archly and put her hand on his arm. Yeah, once when we were all having fun with the toad, Ron chipped in. He gets really pissed if you mess with Trevor. You weren't having fun with him, Neville replied hotly. You were scaring him. They levitated him to the top of the tree. Dressed him up like a Christmas angel, he told Rosie in an aggravated tone.
That's horrible, Rosie replied sympathetically and tried not to smile.
One year, I brought him to camp, Neville continued irritably, apparently determined to dredge up further memories of Trevor abuse. And Remus made me send him back. I had to get Hagrid to watch him so Gran wouldn't squash him. Newfang was going to eat him, he finished up gloomily.
I told you no pets,
Lupin replied in an unconcerned voice.
They're a distraction.
What is this camp?
Rosie demanded, and everyone burst out talking at once.
It's the order camp we do 3 times a year for a fortnight, Harry began. We practice dueling and sword fighting and stuff, and have these mock battles, Charlie continued. And Remus stalks around and gives us lectures about Death Eaters and all the nasty ways they're going to try and kill us, George put in cheerfully.
One time Kingsley and Lupin were the Death Eaters and we were supposed to capture them, Ron added sulkily, and me and Harry ended up at St. Mungo's.
Shut up, Harry muttered.
Camp is great, Neville declared with a drunken grin. I like it. Remus tries to distract us so we'll be prepared for stuff that might happen. One year he used a baby. It was great, he finished happily.
A baby! Rosie and Elizabeth screeched together and turned furiously on Lupin. You brought a real baby to a sword-fighting camp?
Not a real one, Neville told them sternly. A transfigured toad. But we didn't know. We were fighting these fellows meant to be Death Eaters at Sturt Road, see? And he operated that baby right in the middle of the road. Scared the shit out of us. We all stopped fighting and he yelled at us that it was just how we were going to get killed and a troll came out and accidentally stepped on it, he finished with relish. Squish. It was gross. G started bawling and Ron threw up, he finished triumphantly. Ron gave him a ferocious scowl.
Weezer came slinking into the room with a tray of sandwiches and snacks, and when he saw Lupin, he let out a horrible shriek and ran over next to Arthur.
What did you do to him? Hermione said furiously. Look how scared he is. He dropped that whole tray.
Well, I didn't do anything to him, Lupin replied wearily.
I don't think you, of all people, Hermione hissed, apparently completely unconvinced, would know what it's like to be treated badly because of who you are.
I don't treat him badly, Lupin replied calmly, even though he insults me morning till night and won't fucking leave. He called Elizabeth a filthy muggle whore, and I mentioned to him what would happen if he did it again.
What was it then?
Arthur asked Weezer cheerfully, and Weezer turned around and let a loud fart in his face.
I think we need to give you some more literature on SPEW,
Hermione told Lupin hotly, and Ron and Harry shuddered.
Make a break for it, mate, Ron whispered loudly that the whole room could hear.
She's on it now!
The two of them ran out the back door, and Hermione glared at Lupin.
Let's go sit behind the tree, Neville whispered in Rosie's ear and gave her a broad, stupid grin. Then I can talk to you.
Rosie was quite pleased with this idea.
I'm to get Mum next week and bring it to my house, Neville announced after he flopped down on his back behind the Christmas tree. I figure I'll have more time with her before school starts, so she won't freak out being in a new place, he added with another beatific smile. Maybe you could come see her, since you saw her on the train and in the common room, he finished, as if this definitely made Rosie and Alice best of friends.
I'd like that,
Rosie replied, much to her own astonishment. She was quite aware of her natural tendency towards selfishness, and Alice was bound to get in the way somehow. Still, though, she was such a sweet little girl, and she was so nice and thought that bastard really cared about her, and he said they'd kill her kid. It's so awful. I actually do feel terrible for her, she thought, and I really want her to get better. Mostly for Neville, but for her too.
Cool, Neville replied cheerfully. Look, candy canes. I love candy canes.
He pointed his wand up at the tree, and about a dozen candy canes fell onto his chest, lined themselves up, and began doing some sort of dance. Rosie began giggling, and he looked pleased with himself.
I'm really glad I drank all that fire whiskey, he beamed. I'm not embarrassed at all. I always feel embarrassed around you. But now I don't, he added happily, and Rosie giggled again.
Good, she said breathlessly and leaned over him. Maybe you can kiss me then.
Neville reached up and dragged her nearly on top of him, and pulled her lips down towards his with a kind of stifled groan.
Oh, this is great, Rosie thought gleefully. She was finally kissing him again, after all these months, and he seemed an even better kisser than before. After he kissed her lips until she was breathless, he pulled up her hair and kissed her neck, and then started trying to slide her off the shoulder gown farther off, apparently so he could kiss the breasts he'd been fondling.
Maybe we should go upstairs,
she whispered, although they were rather hidden behind the tree. Anyone could peer through the branches or push their way through to the back at any moment. I can't move, Neville mumbled, and Rosie felt a stab of annoyance. Really comfortable.
You're drunk, she replied irritably. You drank too much.
No, I didn't, he replied stubbornly, and closed his eyes. Oh, who cares who looks through the tree, Rosie decided. Lupin and Elizabeth practically did it on a couch at that Valentine's ball with 50 people in the room. They better not say anything to me. She kissed him again, but when he started humming, she stopped and glared at him.
"'Johnston in the snow!' she heard Ginny shrieking. "'He's going to freeze to death! One of you go get him!'
"'You go get him!' Bill offered up cheerily. "'Fleur and I are going home. See you, Remus. Elizabeth, thanks!'
There was a loud pop from the fireplace. Neville was quite relieved to hear Kingsley politely telling Elizabeth goodbye and reminding Lupin to meet up with him at the Hogshead next week. And as soon as Kingsley and his attendant strolled out the door, Elizabeth started begging Lupin to make Teddy's dragon smaller.
"'It's going to catch something on fire!' she wailed, and Teddy began protesting loudly. "'Little fire never hurt anything,' Lupin replied cheerfully.
But Neville imagined Elizabeth had given him a warning look, since he sighed and added,
"'Hand it over, Teddy. I'll make him breathe smoke instead of fire.'
"'That isn't as good!'
Teddy shrieked and burst into tears, and Elizabeth announced it was time for him to go to bed. "'Good,' Rosie thought immediately. "'Everybody go away and leave us alone.' Luna and the creepy boyfriend had already gone, as well as Hermione, who apparently found the inebriated duo of Ron and Harry quite intolerable. "'Yeah, we're going too,' Charlie called out, and Rosie heard him stumbling towards the fireplace with his snickering date. "'Thanks for everything, Remus.'
"'Who's going to go get him?' Jenny yelled angrily. "'I don't know where Ron and Harry are. Where's Neville?'
"'He's gone home!' Neville called out, and Rosie thought she heard Elizabeth laughing.
"'Kiss me some more,'
Rosie demanded and stretched herself out on top of him. But Neville just kept humming and smiling in a rather silly fashion.
"'Deck the halls with bowls of holly,'
he shouted in a rather loud and horribly off-key voice. "'Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la!'
"'Those aren't the right words,'
Rosie said sternly.
"'Okay. God rest ye in a manger, no crib for a bed. Fa-la-la-la. Can you play that on the piano, Elizabeth?'
he yelled.
"'That isn't a song. It's like three songs together,'
Rosie informed him, and he gave her a goofy grin.
"'You're very pretty,' he mumbled, and Rosie beamed. "'Very pretty. Do you know the 12 days of Christmas?'
"'Maybe,'
she replied irritably.
"'Do you have to keep singing?'
Apparently, he did.
12 hats a-dueling, 11 snakes a-slithering, 10 toads a-twirling,
Rosie sighed and sat up.
9 crabs a-creeping, 8 grands a-grinning.
I don't think your gran is in that song, Neville.
Elizabeth poked her head around the tree and started smiling.
We're going to bed. Is this where you're going to sleep?
Yes, Neville replied in a defiant voice. Go bring me a pillow and hurry it up.
Rosie and Elizabeth both burst out laughing.
"'I'm telling Remus you said that,'
Elizabeth replied cheerily and disappeared from view.
"'Seven swords a-swinging, 6 snapes a-wanking, 5 golden turds,'
he bellowed and smacked at the side of the tree for effect, sending an array of ornaments down on top of them both.
"'Where's my pillow?' he moaned sulkily and sat up. "'It hurts from lying on that floor.' "'What's taking us so long?' he shouted.
"'Shh!' Rosie hissed furiously. "'He's going to hear you. You know he can hear everything.'
"'Who?' Neville demanded. "'Who's going to hear what?'
"'Well, this is going to be good,' Rosie thought, as Lupin shoved his way through the branches and gave Neville a murderous look.
"'Why are you telling Elizabeth to get you a pillow and hurry it up?'
he snarled. "'Do you think she's your bloody house elf? She needs to lie down and rest, because you're dead ass and do it yourself.'
Neville ignored this completely.
4 deadly jerseys, 3 garden gnomes, 2 naked newts, and a werewolf in a tree!
He ended with a protracted falsetto note. Lupin started smiling.
You're a rather obnoxious drunk, he informed Neville, reminding me a bit of Sirius.
Deck the halls, let Earth receive her king!
Neville yelled, and Rosie burst out laughing again.
I'll go get you a pillow and a blanket, she said cheerfully and got to her feet.
I told Elizabeth to get it, Neville said in an aggravated tone. I told her to hurry it up, but she hasn't done it yet.
I'll get you a blanket, Lupin told him pleasantly, and smother you with it.
Ha ha ha! That's what you know, Neville called out in a sing-song voice.
Lupin looked at Rosie and shook his head. I take it back. He's actually worse than Sirius. He's right up there with Victor.
Neville moaned. My stomach hurts. I'm going to get sick. Go get me a bucket and hurry it up!
A large metal bucket appeared and began banging Neville on the side of the head, and he snatched it up and promptly began throwing up in it. Rosie shrieked and leapt out from behind the tree.
Ew! She shouted. I can't stand it when people puke. It's making me sick. Somebody's got to get George out of the snow, Ginny yelled at Lupin. And Harry and Ron are up in your tree.
What? Lupin shouted.
They are, she replied unrepentantly. They say they're not going to come down until Hagrid apologizes for calling them little twits. They're going to freeze to death.
Give me a glass of water, Neville said importunately to Lupin. I need to rinse my mouth. And Harriet
sawed off, Lupin replied before he could finish. Arthur, leave that alone.
Arthur had wrapped Elizabeth's handmade ecru lace table runner around his waist in a hula dancer fashion and began swinging his hips.
Look, he bellowed happily. All I need is a coconut bra.
You've got to get George out of the snow, Ginny shrieked, quite undeterred. He's taken all his clothes off, she shuddered, and he's going to freeze.
I don't want to look at that, Lupin said disgustedly.
Then apparate him in here.
You want me to apparate him in here naked?
Apparate him somewhere, Ginny shouted and stomped her foot in a rather Timothy-like fashion. Before he dies, she added dramatically.
Fine. Lupin looked out the window and George disappeared from the snow. Don't anybody go in that first guest room.
Rosie shuddered.
You should have more to drink, Neville called out to Lupin from behind the tree. You're awfully grouchy.
I wish I'd had more to drink, he replied irritably. I can't take any chances. Elizabeth might have this baby, and she wouldn't want me drunk at the hospital.
She doesn't want you at the hospital at all,
Rosie told him cheerfully. Lupin pointedly ignored this.
I'm never going to be able to go to bed, he sighed resignedly to Rosie. And Elizabeth's mad because I'm not up there with her.
Why can't you go to bed?
Arthur will try to apparate himself home and get splinched. He's done it before.
Apparently, this gave Arthur an idea, because he snatched out his wand and shouted, "Vabop!" just as Lupin jumped on him and knocked him to the floor.
What did you do that for?
He yelled. Give me that wand.
Make me a coconut bra. Expelliarmus! Shouted Lupin and pocketed Arthur's wand.
Now go to sleep on that couch.
No!
Rosie turned back to Neville, who had slumped down on his side and was snoring loudly. Maybe getting him drunk wasn't such a great idea, she thought sadly to herself and sighed.
Lupin waved up a pillow and blanket for Neville. I'm only doing this because you made me that wolf's bane, he said crossly and shoved the pillow under his head and flung the blanket on top of him. Where are you going? He snapped at Ginny.
Home, she replied stubbornly. Dad's acting retarded.
Well, take him with you.
I can't, she said loftily. He's too heavy. He'll pull away in the fireplace and come out at somebody else's house. And you better get Harry and Ron out of your tree in the backyard. I think the constable's out there. I can see his lantern.
She jumped into the fireplace. Lupin looked at the sleeping mound in the corner that was Hagrid, and decided an apology probably wasn't forthcoming from that quarter. He stomped out the door, and Rosie started smiling to herself as she plopped down on the couch and dove into Lucretia's delicious desserts.
You know these fellas?
The constable, a large, paunchy, self-important man with a black bowler hat, shiny black cape, and a pack of dogs on a leash, barked impatiently as Lupin approached.
I know them, Lupin replied shortly. That's Harry Potter and Ron Weasley.
The constable looked quite unconvinced and motioned to the dogs, who began circling around the tree and howling.
Harry Potter? Harry Potter in a tree?
The man roared in disbelief and shook his head at Lupin in a condescending fashion.
Oh, don't believe a word of it! Get down from there, you two! Call those dogs, Ron shouted angrily. And quit talking about us like we're kids, Harry yelled at Lupin. I said we're not coming down till he apologizes, and we're not.
He's dead drunk, and he can't apologize, Lupin shouted up at them. Here!
He whistled, and the dogs all started slobbering on him enthusiastically.
The dogs are gone. Now get out my tree!
Hey, you won't make a tree fort? Ron asked Harry cheerfully. Yeah, that'll be great. Okay, set some food up, will you?
He hollered down at Lupin. The second-story bedroom window, which was 20 feet from the tree, opened up, and Elizabeth's head appeared.
Will you two be quiet? She said crossly. I'm trying to go to sleep.
She glanced down and saw Lupin standing beneath the tree.
And it's hard for me to sleep because I'm really lonely.
She slammed the window shut, and Lupin gave Harry and Ron a venomous look.
These are vicious brutes, the constable yelped out as the dogs kept eagerly pawing at Lupin and wagging their tails. What sort of spell you put on my dogs?
None. Dogs like me. They're cousins to wolves, he added as the constable glared at him suspiciously and thrust his lantern rudely up in his face. You know I'm a werewolf. Get that bloody light out of my eyes.
Perhaps you can see better, shouted the constable, who was beginning to mind Lupin of Sir Richard. You know when someone's climbing up in your tree. I'd say you're not much of an auror if you don't know that.
How about those sandwiches? Harry called down loudly.
Remus! Rosie yelled from the doorway. Arthur's upstairs trying to get Elizabeth's wardrobe and get one of her bras. She just smacked him on the head and Teddy's crying.
She finished cheerfully and disappeared back into the house. Lupin knocked the lantern out of the constable's hand and it broke into pieces in the snow.
I can see in the dark, he snarled. I don't need your bloody lantern.
I'll lock you up, bawled the constable, waving his arms wildly. I believe I'm the law in this town, he bellowed, and Lupin lost his temper completely.
And I am the law in this country. He shouted and whipped out his wand. The Order of the Phoenix supersedes the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, as you very well know. Now get out of my yard, for I blast you out of it.
Oh, I think Rita Skeeter's going right by you, screamed the constable, but took off in a rather hasty fashion, howling when one of the dogs bit his leg.
We're hungry, damn it, Harry hollered out angrily. Quit all that yelling and make us some sandwiches or something.
Yeah, hurry up, Ron sulked. I'm starving up here.
Lupin summoned his axe from the barn and started hacking furiously at the bottom of the tree.
"Well, yell, Harry! He's cutting down the tree!"
Ron screeched in a panic-stricken voice.
All right!" Harry shouted. "We're coming down!"
He paused.
"How are we going to get down?"
"Jump!" Lupin spat out. "It's not 25 feet. Hang from branch first and you won't have so far to fall."
Harry jumped first, landed in a pile of leaves, and rolled over completely unscathed. He was quite used to being knocked from his broom while in the air. Ron hit the ground hard and started yelling.
You could evaporate us out of that tree, Harry told Lupin sulkily as he got up.
You need to practice jumping, he replied in disgust. Look at Ron. I've shown him how to do this a dozen times.
My arm's broken, Ron howled. I need to go to the hospital.
Lupin started having a Kenny flashback and was rather surprised when Ron didn't finish the sentence with, dude.
Harry can take you, he snapped.
I'm so drunk, Harry grinned at him cheerfully. I'll splinch him. And you better not apparate him there because he'll tell the whole story and get in trouble from McGonagall. You better go along and make something up.
Next year, we're having a party at your house, Lupin told him darkly, and I'm taking Elizabeth and going home at 10 o'clock.
He and Ron disapparated with a bang. Harry staggered back to the house, gave the snoring Hagrid a kick, and jumped into the fireplace, but not before taking the coconut bra Arthur had conjured up and strapping it to Neville's chest.